If you're just tuning in, this is a special hour-long edition of the KHSU Magazine. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant. The California Faculty Association is established to strengthen the cause of higher education for the public good, to promote and maintain the standards and ideals of the profession, to provide a democratic voice for academic employees, to provide legislative advocacy, and to maintain collective bargaining agreements covering salaries, working conditions, and other items and conditions of employment. CFA representatives Audrina Redman and Sharon Elise visited Humboldt State University last week. They joined me in the KHSU studios to tell me about the work they do and their involvement in the Justice for Josiah movement. Here is that interview. Joining me in the studio today are Sharon Elise and Audrina Redman. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You're both representatives of the California Faculty Association. Sharon, why don't you begin by telling me exactly what the California Faculty Association is and what you do?
California Faculty Association is the union representing all of the faculty who work in the California State University system. That means that we work together in CFA to protect and guarantee faculty rights, to assure quality access and education for students, and to make sure that the service provided to the people of California meets their needs.
So are all of the faculty members, do they automatically become union members, or must they?
No, they have to actively sign a membership card and join the union. It is a faculty member's choice to join. It is solely a union of faculty, but we do have different forms of membership. So, for example, there are counseling faculty, there are coaches who are faculty positions, and so that means they may need specific forms of representation, but all members of Unit 3 are entitled to membership in CFA if they so choose.
Okay.
So that means that we do a lot of work to recruit members, and we find that, especially among tenure-track faculty and more than half-time lecturers, we enjoy very high membership. Librarians are another segment that's represented in Unit 3 by CFA.
Okay, and what is your role in the CSU system and with CFA?
I am a professor of sociology. I started in the CSU in 1989, first working at Fresno State in Women's Studies, and I'm now employed as a professor of sociology at Cal State University San Marcos in North San Diego County.
And your CFA role?
In the CFA, I long time worked as a delegate, as a representative for the Council for Affirmative Action representing my campus. More recently, I've been elected to serve as the associate vice president for the Southern region for the Council for Affirmative Action, which I co-chair with Cecil Canton, who is the North AVP.
I see. And Audrina, what is your role with the CFA?
I am a union representative with CFA. That means I work with faculty at specific campuses that I might be assigned to help them with their organizing, to help develop leadership in the union, as well as to move program that we might have decided is a direction that we need to move in as a union.
And what are the universities that you serve?
Right now I'm working with the good folks at Cal Poly Pomona, but I have worked with the folks at Cal State Northridge, Cal State LA, Cal State Dominguez Hills, Cal State San Marcos, and several others, but in other kinds of capacities, because I also have a statewide assignment. I'm working with our anti-racism and social justice team.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, geez, there's a lot to tell you about that. The biggest word that comes to mind is exciting.
Okay.
The next word I would say is transformative. It is now. It is needed. It is something that our folks are very much engaged in. It is creating necessary dialogue and conversations to talk about who we are and how we work together and how we appreciate our differences, but also like a Venn diagram, come together in those places where we can connect.
I'm guessing you may have been busy, or you've been busy over the last couple of years, because it's a different time in our country, and I'm sure our 23 campuses reflect that. So have you been a little busy?
I would say a lot busy. A lot busy.
Tell me a bit more about that.
So in 2012, our Council for Affirmative Action developed unconscious bias workshop, and that was in response to, you know, we are a union, and the thing that happens to us a lot is we are, I like to tease and call it the complaint department, or, you know, because people come to us when they have a problem. So, you know, so that means we were always running behind and being reactive rather than proactive. And our unconscious bias workshop was definitely a way to try and be proactive. You know, a lot of things arise because people simply don't get along. They're not talking to each other. They're talking past each other. They're miscommunicating because of a number of differences. And just like the broader society, a lot of those differences have to do with how we interpret each other based on our biases. And that can play a really serious role in a place like the Academy where, you know, when faculty come to work at an institution, that's their home for 25, 30 years, maybe a little longer for some people. It can get in the habit and become a dysfunctional family. So and we see that with our grievances and other kinds of issues that aren't necessarily grievable, but they are relational. So doing our unconscious bias workshop has helped some departments. It certainly has helped some individuals to see themselves in the system and how those biases that we all have in different ways, how that comes to play in the workplace and then can really affect the environment around you. And you can't get work done when things build up and people don't know how to talk or they're afraid to talk because, you know, we make our biases exceptional. And they're not that unique. We have them. We all watch TV. We've all gotten messages from here and from there. And then there's some very popular ones that we all can recognize. But to say that I'm a human being and you're a human being and we live in this world that we live in and we're all affected by the history of the world and who tells that history and who told it to us, if we can acknowledge that and then say, okay, it's okay for me to come from a place of humility and acknowledge that I have this, but I want to move past this. And so that's what our workshop really, I think, fuels that kind of conversation between people. When we're doing it, it's because it's 4 hours, and I know certainly people start in one place, but you can see the process happen in them by the end of the 4 hours.
Have you noticed or have you encountered participants who have perhaps, all of us to a certain extent, normalized behaviors? So racial discrimination, gender discrimination, and the like, we have grown to normalize and just accept, but we're moving in a different era where people are being empowered, they are comfortable with speaking up and speaking out. So have you encountered in your workshops where individuals have shown different biases that they didn't recognize as biases, and now they recognize,
That is the workshop in a nutshell.
Wow.
The workshop in a nutshell, because the fact is most faculty will think of themselves as very liberal thinkers and as very, they would probably say, tolerant, you know, of all kinds of differences. And so the first homework that they have makes them look at their results of a test they take, and we ask them to take at least 2, want them to take 4 from the Harvard Implicit Bias Test. And so they definitely have to take the race and gender, and they are surprised, you know, but we have to pave the way for them to recognize that this is not a fact about you. This is about us as a society. And we all have implicit biases we are not aware of. Mm-hmm. Once we're aware of them, then we can begin to think, how might this be affecting me when I'm reviewing my colleagues for promotion? How might it be affecting me when I'm reviewing a grant for funding? Right? Because you begin to see, oh my goodness, I didn't know I had this preference for white people. I didn't know that I had a preference for women and family over men and family, right? Mm. And so one of the first things we do is share the results of those and talk about what was our emotional reaction to finding out we had these biases, right? And then begin to process that.
So have you encountered in these workshops where people of color are part and then they realize that they may have biases of their own against other people of color?
Well, and we all do. And sometimes it might be more a preference for certain mm-hmm. groups over others. And that's kind of how we will phrase it. But certainly people of color will find, oh, I didn't know I had these ideas about another group, you know. And all of us have been in the same stew, as Audrina was sharing. We've all gotten these same mainstream messages. And if they're unexamined, we don't have the wherewithal to face them and change them.
I see. So there are two words that we have spoken about that is quite surprising, because I thought it was illegal in the state of California, and that is affirmative action. So I recall the late 80s, early 90s, a gentleman by the name of Ward Conley, an African-American yes. man who felt affirmative action was illegal and providing unfair preference to people of color. Tell me about that whole affirmative action thing within the public school system in the state of California, and what it is today, and how we can still use that name affirmative action in your both of your roles.
If I could say, so my introduction to California was 1994, the gubernatorial race of Kathleen Brown, who is our current Governor Brown's sister, was running for governor against Pete Wilson. And on the ballot that year was Proposition 187, which was an attack on immigrants, immigrant families. It would have denied access to school. It would have denied access to social services. It would have made it was egregious. I was appalled at that, but I learned that right behind that was a proposition which eventually became Prop 209 to eliminate affirmative action. Mostly it was in enrollment, university enrollment. And again, it was an attempt and a not subtle attempt at othering people, saying, you know, we don't want those people to have this resource. That's a clue to you that at how important education is. I think it's definitely a clue how important education is. But if you look at the law, even then, this university, along with all universities, depends on federal dollars. And federal dollars comes when your doors are open and there's access to folks, which is why we consciously and in direct conflict to Proposition 209 chose to call the Council for Affirmative Action. Because we formed after Prop 209, because we were saying, no matter what you say, affirmative action is not dead. Hmm. And the universities, they continue to practice it. It just looks different. Words change, but the actions have to be there because the actions match the money.
Absolutely. So there, here on the campus of Humboldt State, there is no longer an Office of Affirmative Action. It's Student Talent Search, I believe it's what it's called. So it is the component that does actively recruit and seek enrollment for lesser served or lesser represented students here on campus.
Right. So. If you think about it, the CSU enrollment is overwhelmingly first generation college students. And they are Californians. And so who is the growing population of first generation or potential first generation enrollees to our university? It is people of color.
So that's precisely who was being unraveled by all that repressive legislation. You know, there's a sociologist, George Lipset, said California of the 90s looked like Mississippi. And called Mississippi of the 90s.
Wow.
Because three strikes and you're out came then.
That's right.
That's where we began mass incarceration mm-hmm. here. At the same time, we had 209, which pushed people of color completely almost out of the UC system and into the CSU, which has been our boon. But at the same time, it meant that we could not have programs explicitly targeting those students right as they really needed them. And then you also had the undoing of bilingual education, you know, attack on that, at the same time that you had this 187 that Audrina just mentioned, which was basically unconstitutional mm-hmm. because it would have undone the 14th Amendment, taken us back to before the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. You know, so talk about regressive legislation. So the Council for Affirmative Action was really a response to all this that was endangering the wherewithal of people of color to gain access and thrive in higher education.
I think another component that wasn't very helpful is the discussion of Ebonics in school. If I remember correctly, that was around
the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Ebonics was used as a tool to discredit particularly African Americans when it's just a different pattern of speech and language. Mm-hmm. But these are all things to, sounds like, criminalize mm-hmm. knowledge and education and a path for change.
It's reactionary.
Oh my goodness.
And we're living in reactionary times again.
So true, so true. What brings you to Humboldt State University? So both of you mentioned Southern California connections, but you're here at Humboldt. What brings you here?
Well, we have two duties, I think.
Mm-hmm. Dual purpose.
Yeah, we are for our union. It's we'll be bargaining again in a year, and so this is a time to remind our members of the good work that has been done in the past, to begin to soften the ground, lay the work for the bargaining fight ahead. But we have people move in and out of employment, and so we have a lot of new folks who weren't around for the last bargaining fight, and so we're here to give them a little history lesson, as well as to encourage them about our progress and the good works we've done and the kinds of ways that we work as a union, which is we have many different tentacles, we like to
yes.
say.
Okay.
Calling it the story of us.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we have 30% new members who may not know the story of us. And we want them to be aware of how well we work together, how effective we are, how powerful we are when we work together to assure quality education for our students. We say faculty working conditions are student learning conditions. Yeah. We always put those two together. And so this is a way of teaching this to new members who really don't have that union history, as Audrina was sharing.
Right. The second reason we're here is because we not only do we have a Council for Affirmative Action, but within our union, we have been through, I guess it's maybe 2 years into what we call an anti-racism and social justice transformation. We are molding ourselves into a social justice union. And that means that we take on issues that fit under that umbrella. We are engaged in the Justice for Josiah campaign. Our local chapter folks have been connected since the beginning. I think shortly after David Josiah Lawson's unfortunate murder on April 15th of 2017, Sharon and a few other colleagues were up here doing an unconscious bias workshop, and that workshop was completely interrupted and had to be transformed in the moment because there was such grief and grieving and shock and disappointment about what had happened to David Josiah Lawson. And so the chapter was engaged, and we organizationally decided to apply our skills, knowledge, know-how, and energies following the Board of Trustees' July meeting, at which Charmaine Lawson went and gave her second presentation to the Board of Trustees, saying, "You need to do more. You have to do better in responding to this issue, given who and what Humboldt State is to the community of Arcata. You have to do more, given who these Black and Brown students are that you are recruiting from the greater LA metropolitan area and bringing them up to this, yes, beautiful environment, yes, great small town feel environment, but the truth is there's an underlying ugliness here that students of color are facing in this environment." So she said those great things in July also, but what was different about her presentation was that a police officer was assigned to stand near her, behind her, as she's giving her presentation at the dais to the Board of Trustees. Some of our folks saw that, and we said, nope, that's the line. That's the line. That only happened with her. And I've been in many Board of Trustees meetings, I've never seen anybody have someone standing behind them like that. And the entire time the officer's playing with his tool belt, that's what I call it, he's playing with his tool belt. I mean, we've been to the Board of Trustees meeting and we've rallied and stamped and gone to stand in front of them and pass out information and all this. I've never had that happen to any of our folks with a police officer standing behind them like that. And so given the times that we live in where you have so many Black mothers going to police commissions, going to city council meetings and saying, my child is dead and you are doing nothing. Then that was our call to step in and get engaged more fully. The truth is that when the environment is unsafe for students, then the environment is unsafe for faculty and staff as well. Mm-hmm. The same kind of efforts are put when you, because universities always talk about diversity. Don't talk so much about inclusion, but always talk about diversity and always are busy constantly recruiting people to come to a place. They recruit faculty, they recruit staff, they recruit students, and the messaging is all the same. Humboldt's a great place, and it is. It's beautiful up here. It's gorgeous environment, but the university has a unique responsibility to this community given its importance and influence in this community. There was more that could have been done by the chancellor. There was more that could have been done by President Rosbacher, and all of the activism and the organizing of the Justice for Josiah campaign just truly exposed all of that. So while we're coming in and adding our talents and our gifts and our experiences and our resources to that fight, we're really following and taking advantage of all the good work that has been done up here already.
Mm-hmm.
Our purpose, what we decided we wanted to do was we wanted to humanize David Josiah Lawson. So he's not just some random student that some random thing happened to somewhere, but to say who he was, as well as to help the story move beyond Arcata. And I know we've done that, and we're going to continue to be doing that because we are determined to work with Charmaine to seek justice for her baby.
If you're just tuning in, this is a special hour-long KHSU magazine. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant. I'm speaking with Audrina Redman and Sharon Elise, representatives of the California Faculty Association. I know Charmaine has been speaking out. She's gone to various CSU campuses to speak with students to ensure that David Josiah Lawson, her son's name, will continue to live on. She has really been pushing for, as you said, protections and safety measures for students, particularly students of color, when they come onto a CSU campus. What would you say to those critics who say that that's not practical, that's not realistic, and it's not the university administration's obligation to ensure the safety of a student outside of the campus?
This is an ongoing issue for universities. They have to recognize they are part of the community. We live in the community, work in the community, engage with people in the community, and the students need to know what kind of communities they are in. You know, we are used to talking about this in terms of gender, talking about safety for women, talking about, you know, one of the issues I think in that regard, I remember very keenly when I was at Fresno, that there would be reports of rapes off campus and the campus police didn't want to accept those reports and the campus didn't want to deal with them. But this is, you know, we love borders in this country, don't we? And
yes,
so this
absolutely
is just another border that we have to explode, because the border between the campus and the community is fictitious.
Hmm.
Okay, it is simply fictitious. It doesn't exist. We're sitting right here. Right across the street is outside. So does that mean if something happens out there, it didn't happen here? These are together, and they have to be seen in that way. And so these students come here, and they are not aware that they don't have the same support, for example, of having a large community of people of color. And that's one of the big differences. It's not that there's not white supremacy in other places. It's all over our country. It's part of our history. We should expect that. But do they have, and have they taken care to provide the kinds of supports for students that they can learn how to operate within such an environment, how to provide each other with support? You know, that's necessary. And that is not outside the realm of what universities should do.
Well, I want to just throw some examples here. The university has no problem saying that they need a relationship with the business community.
There you go.
The university has no problem saying we need a relationship with industry. The university has no problem with we need to invite these movers and shakers of the world into our institutions. They have no problem with that. The university has no problem with supporting the gentrification of communities. They have no problem with any of that. But just like the broader society, we have a big problem when it comes to talking about issues of race and gender.
There you go.
We have a huge problem with that because nobody wants to deal with that. We don't want to deal with that. We don't want to deal with that. But if you are a student of history, or even you just live a little bit, you'll see things keep coming up over and over and over again. And they're the same themes because we don't deal with them. We want to just, you know, sweep it under the rug. But you can't sweep it under the rug. You can't, Humboldt State, thrive as an overflow institution for black and brown students, particularly brown students, but our African-American men are more vulnerable in terms of violence. You can't thrive on their coming to campus and then don't do the other work. And you can't just say words, you know, we're a diverse institution, we welcome everybody. You have to do more than that. Just like no university would say, we don't want a relationship with the business community. No university would say, we don't want a relationship with industry. No university would say, we don't want a relationship with these other institutions so that our students can go and get degrees from there and then go on. That same commitment has to be made to the university, building the kind of relationship with the outside community, bringing them into this environment too, so that then it's welcoming to students. Everybody can benefit and prosper from that. I live in Long Beach. And the Cal State Long Beach is very busy doing a lot of gentrification in Long Beach, is very busy working with the business community, is very busy working with the industries, the port industry in Long Beach, and is in very, very interested in the students who come from all over the place to attend Cal State Long Beach, that they stay there. So they're working to build an environment so students can stay. There's jobs, there's housing, and there's forward growth in that way. But the other part has to happen too.
So I think we're seeing a more expansive approach to working with students too. And this is one of the things that we have been pushing in partnership with students, so that when students come and we find, and faculty have surveyed them to also get the data to show this, that they have food insecurity. You know, almost half our students have food insecurity. Obviously, we can't say the university doesn't care if the students come to class hungry. That's not a good learning environment. And again, so this becomes a CFA issue because student learning conditions are faculty working conditions. We have to worry about student access to housing. We have homeless students on our campuses, right? Trying to find places to sleep, to wash up, and trying to find food to eat. So we have to have a more expansive notion of how we serve our students and provide a wholesome environment in which they can learn and thrive.
Well, quite frankly, there's some faculty, our part-time faculty, lecture faculty, adjunct faculty, you know, those terms
exactly.
That we use, who may, you know, I like to say that one of the joys for me working as a union rep for this organization is that I work with people for whom their work is who they are. It's not a job. Mm-hmm. It is who they are. They love what they do, which is why some people would say, well, if it's that hard, why are you doing it? Because it's a passion. Mm-hmm. And how many people do you know in your life who are blessed enough to have employment that's their passion?
That's what radio does for me.
I know. So I get it. Yeah. Yes. So you know, we have faculty who are homeless. We have faculty who are food insecure as mm-hmm. well.
That's right.
And I guess just an average person would assume, because a person is working on a college campus, a person is a professional and a lecturer or a professor, that they're pulling in the dough and they have not a problem in the world, not a worry. I know for a fact there have been African American administrators who have not been able to seek housing and leave because they haven't been able to seek housing. And it's a different kind of housing insecurity issue. It's insecurity on the parts of landlords and property owners who are not willing to rent
to
people
well, see,
color.
Yes, and that's exactly the kind of thing a university has to address. You know, you're bringing, you're recruiting people to come to this community. My daughter was in this community for a while. Yes, it is hard for Black people to find work here. Mm. You know, it is hard for Black people to establish friendships here. It is hard for Black people to find places to live here. Mm-hmm. And they mostly have to go to white people for all those things. You know, so there, all those implicit biases we were talking about earlier come into place,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so that becomes very difficult for those people. University cannot ignore that, you know. And then the other thing you were talking about with lecturer faculty, you know, that we have really temporized the faculty throughout the state, you know. And I think if the same thing happened with doctors, the public would be in an uproar. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to a doctor that's got a temporary job, but more than 60% of the faculty are temporary workers. So they have not got stability. As CFA, we're trying to provide as much stability as we can through our contract. But really, this is a question of the will of the state to change the equation. You know, ideally, the legislature has said we want to have 70% of faculty on tenure track. Right now, it's more like less than 40%. That's a crisis.
I think a comment you were making earlier reminds me of something I say to people all the time, people who might be a little intimidated, especially people of color who are intimidated to get engaged in a fight like Justice for Josiah. You can't class your way out of your race.
No.
Oh, that sent shivers.
Because yes, I'm a university administrator. Yes, I'm a university faculty. Aha, but you are Black.
And you can't hide it.
You can't hide it. Well, some people can.
Yeah, not you and I.
I can't
hide
it.
There are a few.
But
you
can't class your way out of your race. And so you have anybody, you have to be in the struggle.
Just ask Barack Obama, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is a man. He's the president of the United States of America. He does international travel, and world leaders refuse to shake his hand sometimes.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. You can't class your way, and that's the ultimate class. You can't class your way out of your race. So don't run from yourself.
Yes.
I'm in the struggle all the time because I say, I have no choice. I have no choice.
As an African-American and as a woman.
So that's right.
I can commiserate. I definitely know. So when you spoke of David Josiah Lawson's murder a moment ago, Audrina, you were talking about Black men, or it may have been you, Sharon, actually. You were talking about Black men who have been become victims of crimes on CSU campus. Are there numbers that we can substantiate about violence that has been enacted upon African-American men in particular?
Well, the students have, you know, done some great work, and I know they hung a banner here mm-hmm. with the name, nine young men in the CSU who've perished over a number of years. Those are the egregious cases. Those are the cases where someone lost their life. There are many, many, many cases of students complaining and seeking help because they are being intimidated or harassed. Take, for example, and I can't remember the young man's name right now, the San Jose student.
I was thinking the same thing.
Who mm-hmm. was harassed for months in his dorm suite with putting up signs and doing a slave auction and putting up the U-lock, the bicycle U-lock around his neck, and all of these things that were happening to him in the dorm room. But because we so often don't have so much of our society teaches us to blame the victim, to blame ourselves for what happened. He didn't seek help for a long time because he thought, you know, maybe this was just about him, or he didn't want to cause any trouble. You know, it got to a point where he had to say something. So we know about that example. Most times, too often, students lodge complaints or make complaints and they don't really go anywhere. You know, the tables always get turned to say, well, did you really interpret that right? Did you really understand what was happening? Well, maybe we'll just, instead of dealing with the issue, maybe we'll just move you to a new dorm room.
Exactly. Or students may not even say anything. And one of the things that's very sad, and I've seen this a lot with students of color, is that they individualize it. They feel embarrassed that this happened. And so for them to share it kind of makes them go through it again, mm-hmm. you know, that feeling of humiliation. Mm-hmm. And they just do feel, as Audrina was suggesting, they feel somehow responsible, even though we know they're not. Right. So this is one of the reasons why it's so important for us to help people begin to understand this is a system. You didn't start it. You know, you're suffering from it, and we need to work collectively.
And I want to say, nothing that we're saying here should negate the good works that people are doing on campuses. It shouldn't negate the folks over at the Multicultural Center or the Women's Center or the African-American Student Center or the Latinx Center. I don't want anyone to feel disparaged, because I know everybody is honestly doing their level best. It's just that, as piggybacking off of what Sharon said, there is a system at play here, and we're not sheltered from that system. So, which is again the reason why we do the unconscious bias workshop, because it all relates. So that's what we're saying. I just want to back up, because I don't want anyone to say, "But I'm working on it." Yes, you are, and you're doing good work.
A lot of good folks keep doing good works. Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk about that workshop and what it looked like in April of 2017. You were here for an unconscious bias workshop, and a murder occurred of one of our own. David Josiah was murdered over the weekend of Easter, and students were returning back from spring break to discover and learn the news. And here you are preparing for a workshop. So let's walk through how that was transformed from the unconscious bias workshop to supporting our community.
So I arrived 5 days after David Josiah Lawson had been murdered. I arrived on my birthday, very excited to see my daughter and do this workshop with the campus. And the first thing my daughter told me is, "Mommy, you may not be able to just do your workshop, because we are reeling here." And she was living just 2 blocks from where the murder had happened. She was keenly aware of it.
Your daughter was a student here.
She had been a student here, and she stayed for the ducks and the chickens and the beautiful place. And boy, anyway. So she had given me this, you know, forewarning. So that was excellent, because the minute we came on campus, we saw signs that asked for people to show sensitivity, because so many people were in shock. And so certainly then we were not surprised when we came in. And, you know, I have to say, we did try to do our thing, but it was quite clear to me that, you know, people were unable to deal with any kind of a structured presentation and, you know, set up interactions and role plays and so on. And so as soon as we took a break, I got with my colleagues and I said, you know, people are hurting too much, and it's not possible to put their minds on what we brought. And we need to really just look at how can we support them, and how can we give them a space to begin to respond and think about how are they going to respond as a community. I will tell you, I was at the same motel that all of the family was staying, right? Mm. They had the memorial t-shirts, and here I am. When do I ever come to Humboldt and see, like, over a dozen Black people in one place? So this was unusual. And so the death, the murder, was so present, and the responses from people were so traumatized that what we felt was best to do was provide a space for our colleagues to share their pain. Some of these were people who taught in the department he was majoring in, and they were just really needing to sit with each other, realize this had happened, begin to think about, you know, what are we going to do? How can we support the family?
I do thank you for being here and altering your path. I'm sure I wasn't a participant, but I'm sure it was a great help and comfort to those who did participate. So thank you. How are we supporting students now in this Justice for Josiah fight?
We had a week of action. October 15th was a week of action, and something took place on all 23 of the Cal State University campuses, because as I say, one of our goals was to get the news out. Many students were shocked, had not heard of it, didn't even think of themselves as potentially being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And were like, that happened to a CSU student? And I heard more than one student say, but how could that happen on a campus? Campus is not exclusive of the community. That's how it happens.
There's no border.
There is no border, right? So there were great actions on the 23 campuses. Students and the faculty working together did tabling, hung banners, showed the documentary Unsolved Hate and had some discussion about that, flyered, postered, all of that. And really educated a lot of folk. And as I say, we had, you know, some people asked the question, you know, well, why does CFA care? Why are we involved in this? And this is, you know, this happened at Humboldt. Well, it didn't just happen at Humboldt. It happened at every rural campus. It happens at urban campuses. It happens everywhere. And if we don't call it out, then it'll do what it always does, which over time it'll just disappear and then happen again.
And we've seen that.
And there won't be any, there aren't systems in place to address these things when they happen, because we always want to act like it doesn't happen. But it does. It's particularly at our rural campuses where communities are a little more isolated, a little more removed, less urban, and more, I don't want to use the word traditional, but that's the word that's coming to mind. And this is not just
homogenous.
Homogenous, that's the word. This is not just a matter of culture clashing.
No.
I've heard someone say, this is just a clash of cultures. This is just our culture. Well, you need to adjust your culture. Yeah. You know, it's time for a culture change here, because this is America, the melting pot, right? California is really that. The whole state is that. So we need to get together like gumbo.
Huh. And explain that. I know what gumbo is.
But just don't put it in a blender.
Yeah. Yes. You know, gumbo's a mishmash soup. All kinds of things you don't think should be in a pot together or putting a pot together. And man, that's good with a piece of cornbread.
Kind of like succotash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like succotash too. Yeah.
It's a mixture minus the lima beans, but I digress.
Oh, no.
Somehow always ends up at food, doesn't it?
When you're talking to me, especially. And okra.
So how can we continue to support the Justice for Josiah movement, support students, and move forward from this and use this as a springboard or an impetus or something to encourage change? How can we do that?
Well, a couple of things. On our flyer that we produced, which was what we were using to table, we asked folks to reach out to the Attorney General's office, because that is an ask of the Lawson family, to reach out to the Attorney General's office so that they can assume a greater role, an investigatory role in the resolution and the hopeful arrest of his murderer. The other thing that folks can do is post it on your social media. Help the word of this get out of this campus. That applies pressure. Because, you know, as long as things are in the dark, then they don't exist. So we need the help getting that word out. And thirdly, I think something that we may not think about that often, quite frankly, but Charmaine Loss lives in Southern California. It's a hike to get up here, that's time, but it's also the expense of that. So we need folks to donate to the campaign. And I'm if you visit the Facebook page, Justice for David Josiah Lawson, and visit the Instagram, Diversity Is Not Inclusion, you can find the GoFundMe information. I don't remember that exactly at this moment. Shame on me. But the other thing I think was something that you all did here already, which stopped, but really should continue and morph in the ways that it will, is the community talks.
Mm.
You know, those community dialogues. I know there was some issue with the, and you can speak more to that, with the university's lack of engagement in that. But, you know, leaderful people don't need leaders. They do what needs to be done. So you all stepped out there and did that, and I encourage folks to continue to do that. And then I encourage people mm-hmm. to remember their numbers and representation are not inclusion. If you're not in it, then it ain't for you. Because we say what, Sharon?
Nothing about us without us is for us.
So you got to be in it.
Absolutely. I do want to say one other thing. So do you think the Justice for Josiah movement will be an impetus for legislative change, for greater safety measures for students? Is that something that you see happening? And is that something that CFA can support Charmaine Loss in seeing happen?
Can't speak to that happening now, but that is definitely a thought. We certainly, as an anti-racist social justice organization, have been involved in drafting and supporting pieces of legislation along those lines. So I can't speak directly to that now, but certainly that makes sense as a possibility. But I want to go back to what I just said. Can't wait for other people outside of you to be doing that work. And look, it's illegal to murder people. It doesn't stop it from happening.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So we can't, that's not a fix-all, right?
We have been looking at related issues of policing because we know that some of the things brought up in the aftermath of the stabbing had to do with police response. So CFA is looking at asking for an audit of policing across our campuses because we need to know more about the kind of training and education that police get that should be very specific to working with the populations that come to campus, and that they need to be very sensitive. And we've had issues of racial profiling and harassment and unwarranted arrest. So those have been problems in the past and are probably problems still now. So I think along the same lines as our support for the Senate Bill 1421 that recently passed, we'll continue to look at issues around policing and certainly look at the ways that law enforcement and the justice system interface with these issues of campus populations. But that's just not the whole solution because, again, it's such a systemic problem. It feeds into the issues of our culture, and so it has to have a really holistic response. So this is, you know, protracted struggle, long term. You know, how can we just create ways that we can live and work together peacefully? And
it's a journey, not a race.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a beautiful struggle.
Yes. And where can we get more information about the California Faculty Association and some of the actions that are implemented currently and some of the future work that you'll be doing?
Well, certainly you can visit our website, the California Faculty Association. Don't put in CFA because then you'll get the cat fanciers of America.
So, you know that for a fact.
Because I do it sometimes. I go, oh, yeah, you got to look up the California Faculty Association. You can also go to the web page of Students for Quality Education. That is our internship program. So you should look up the California Faculty Association and Students for Quality Education.
Well, Sharon and Audrina, thank you very much for joining me on this day, and thank you for the work that you are doing for the Cal State system, for the California Faculty Association, and for Charmaine Lawson and her family seeking justice for Josiah.
Yeah, it's our duty.
Thank you, Lorna.
Thank you, Lorna.
Thank you. I'm going to end the show with a song that was released a day and a half before the murder of Josiah Lawson. It was Kendrick Lamar's Damn CD, and the song Love has resounded with me since his murder. And this is the instrumental of that song currently, and we will end with the full song. I'm Lorna Bryant from the KHSU Magazine team. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
Damn. Love and lust. Damn. All of us.
Give me a run for my money. There's nobody, no one that'll run me.
Another world premiere.
So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely.
I'd rather you trust me than to
lovely.
Keep it a whole one, huh? Don't got you, I got nothing. Hey,
I got something.
Hold up.
We gon' function.
Hey,
no assumption. Feeling like Tyson with it. Knock it out twice, I'm with it. Only for the night, I'm kidding. Only for life, yeah. Only for life, yeah. Only for life, let's get it.
Hit that shoulder lean. I know what's coming over me. Backstroke overseas, I know what you need.
Already on 10, all money come in. All feeling go out, this feeling don't drought. This party won't end.
If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still? If I'm in my mind at work, would you still? Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to. Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing.
Run for my money. There was nobody, no one that'll run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely. Just love.
I wanna be with you. I wanna be with. I wanna be with you. I wanna be with. I wanna be with you.
Just love.
I'm on the way. We ain't got no time to waste. Popping your gum on the way. And mine away. I don't want pressure you none. I want your blessing today.
Lovely.
Oh, by the way, open the door, by the way. Tell you that I'm on the way. I'm on the way. I know connection is vague. Pick up the phone for me, babe. Damn it, we jamming. That had a tooth from your nanny. Curving your hip from your mammy. Remember Gardena. I took the studio camera. I know Typo be mad at me. I had to do it. I want your body, your music. I bought the big one to prove it. Look what you made. Told you that I'm on the way. I'm like an exit away. Yep.
If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still?
If I'm in my mind at work, would you still?
Lovely.
Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to.
Lovely.
Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing.
Run for my money. There was nobody, no one that'll run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely.
I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you.